I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land we are recording on, the Cammeraygal and the Guringai peoples, to their elders past, present, and emerging, and we celebrate the ongoing connections to land and water. I have the privilege of sharing the story of a remarkable guest whose journey embodies the very essence of resilience and courage. But beyond her impressive credentials lies a story that defies the odds, a narrative shaped by the twists and turns of life's unpredictable journeys. From her humble beginnings to the challenges of motherhood, our guest, Taryn Reeves, with unwavering determination and an indomitable spirit. This is a journey you won't want to miss.
Welcome to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. The host, Karen Sander, has the privilege of interviewing individuals from all walks of life, each with their own powerful and inspiring stories. The guests share their life experiences, and in doing so, they celebrate the transformative magic of storytelling. To learn more, visit www.thestoryroom.au and explore the private membership area, the Backstage Pass.
And if you're intrigued by what Taryn has to offer, and trust me, as a publisher, her wisdom is pure gold, then don't miss out on our Backstage chat. Whether you're considering penning your own story or in need of a skilled ghostwriter, the Backstage Pass is your ticket to unlocking Taryn's wealth of knowledge. Welcome, Taryn Reeves.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, your journey is an incredible journey. You began life in Zimbabwe.
As you said, I was born in Zimbabwe, which is like a small teapot-shaped country in Africa, southern Africa. And we were farmers. I pretty much spent my childhood running around with no shoes on in the bush, camping, horse riding, climbing trees, that sort of thing. And I went to a boarding school because that's just what we do over there, because everything's few and far between. When you're in junior school, I went to a weekly boarding, so only went home once a week. And then when I went to senior school, I went to an all-girls boarding school and I only went home once a month.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a very strict, compared to Australia, schooling system, very kind of like military, but it gave me amazing foundations for discipline and how to basically project manage life, I guess. So I am grateful for that. I hated it, mind you. I was bullied in high school because I was always a nerd. Like, I've always been the nerd, the nerdy one. Like, I wasn't interested in playing spin the bottle or anything that normal teenagers do. I would be the one sitting in the corner reading a book.
I like how you describe your life as you project managed, as it taught you to project manage your life. It's a very interesting way of thinking about it. I mean, many of my guests talk about their nerd type personalities and that they were bullied. Mm. And I think I'm going to put a take on this, that sometimes that bullying gives you the ability to be resilient and to have courage in later life.
100%. Like, I'll never forget the day someone put a letter in my locker that said, "You are the queen of the bitches." And at the time, I was heartbroken. Like, it was horrible. But looking back on it now, I'm like, you know what? Hell yeah, I am. I am the queen. Like, do you know what I mean? I mean, at the time, it's not so great. But if you can find that inner courage and resilience to take what life gives you as lemons and, I don't know, pour a tequila shot or something and turn it into something good and fun, then you come out the other side and you can do things with that. It's just flipping that perspective.
Yeah, and life giving people lemons is another way of building courage and resilience. Mm. And I love it as a theme topic for stories. It's a great topic and it brings out amazing stories.
Mm.
You eventually left Zimbabwe. Your family were farmers. And
yes,
that part of the journey really interests me.
Mm. Yes, that part got a little messy, a little traumatic, I guess. That's when things started to get real and go downhill. You know, there was the bullying and all that sort of stuff, but that was just one kind of aspect that started my resilience journey. But when there started to be a lot of political violence and unrest in Zimbabwe due to an overthrow of governance and things like that, we lost our farms. We lost everything. And if you've ever seen the movie Blood Diamond, where there's like child soldiers running around with guns and just complete chaos, it honestly was like that. And so those were kind of, that period of my life was kind of during my transformative years between the ages of like 11 and 15. You know, when I was just coming into teenagehood with all those hormones and things raging. So not only was I going to this boarding school where I was getting bullied, but there was all of this stuff happening as well. It was traumatic, full stop. There's no other way I can describe it, because unless somebody's been in a situation like that, you can only imagine. And honestly, I wouldn't even want people to imagine, because it's horrible. Like, people were being murdered on the regular. People were being raped. People's animals were being killed. People's workers were being beat up. People were being locked up in their houses and shots fired at the house. Like, just a campaign of terror to try and out the farmers, because it didn't start out as a racial thing, in my opinion. And this is all only my opinion in hindsight of everything that's happened. What happens with the Constitution is that sometimes people can only be in a presidential seat for so long before they have to give it over to another party member or another party in general. And what happened was Robert Mugabe, the president at the time, he did not want to do that. So he decided, well, I'm the president, so I get to do whatever the hell I want. Basically ripped up the Constitution and said to the majority of the population who happened to be uneducated and not wealthy, and said, the white colonialists have colonized your land. This land belongs to you. Take it back by any means possible, and I will provide for your families. I will make you wealthy. You'll have everything that you ever wanted. I mean, what a juicy carrot to dangle, right? Like, if I was in that situation, if I was uneducated, if I didn't know any better and someone said that to me, well, of course I'm going to want to do the best for my family and try and make that happen, right? And then on top of that, once the people realized that this wasn't the way to go, he would just beat them into submission, or he would literally murder their family members or lock them up if they didn't vote for him. So they were actually left with no choice. And so then what happened was it turned into a racial, and I'm using inverted commas with my fingers for those of you who can't see on the audio, because the majority of farmers had white skin and the majority of working class had dark skin. Now, to me, I don't care about any of that. To me, it's not racial, but it turned into this big racial campaign, if you like. And we got punished for our ancestors' mistakes when the British colonized Zimbabwe, basically. So generations on, we had nothing to do with it. Like, my ancestors' 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 ancestors made that mistake, but we eventually paid the price for that. But long story short, we had to flee the country, basically. But because of the color of our skin, Australia would not accept us as refugees. So we had to apply for visas, and we had to wait a year for paperwork to process. And the paperwork to even apply was, because we were a family of four, was bigger than four manuscripts for a book put together. Like, all of this paperwork to submit and apply and pay money for, hundreds of thousands of dollars to even be accepted. And then even then they accepted us, but we had to fulfill a certain amount of things. Like, we had to start our own business. We had to employ a certain amount of Australians. We had to turn over a certain amount of money. And if we didn't do any of those things, they would deport us. So it was a very strict acceptance, I guess. But me being 15 at the time, I didn't really care about any of that. That was kind of my parents' problem. I was more interested in the fact, like, oh my gosh, I get to go to this new country where I'm not going to be the nerd anymore. I'm not going to be bullied anymore. And I get to become this person that everybody could like. Like, I could start, I remember very clearly writing this in my diary, I am going to become a person that everybody likes when I move to Australia. And that was kind of the first time that I guess I became ashamed of who I was on like a soul level, on a personal level, and learned to start masking and acting and playing that game that so many of us play to be accepted.
The pressure was so on your family. It was like a pressure cooker. Oh, my God, I can't imagine. Come here, start a business, employ people, just get on with life. And for you, an understandable, a 15-year-old, what do they know about life and how their parents are supporting them? It's like the blinkers are on.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was very aware that my parents were very stressed and like it wasn't a great time for anybody. But again, like, I mean, you're so self-involved at that age. Like, I didn't really notice that, I guess.
Hindsight's wonderful because now you realize how self-involved you are.
100%.
And you see kids these days and you think, oh, yeah, they're just off on their own little fairy world, you know. They'll get it one day.
Well, hopefully not. Like, honestly, I hope that doesn't ever happen to anybody. But, yeah, that they will come to some understanding that the lessons that they are here to learn.
You finished school in Australia.
I did, yep.
And you began a career or a career path. You went to university.
I did.
That's my next thing I want to hear about.
I went through to year 12 and I did things like extension English and advanced mathematics and all this fancy stuff because resident nerd over here. Like I always viewed myself and culturally as a Zimbabwean person, I honestly do think that your worth to your family is kind of measured on how good you make them look. It's very status driven. And so I always felt that pressure to perform, like be the A student, be good at everything, like have excellent manners. And it's just the way I was raised. So I graduated out of year 12. I went straight into university because gap years are only for kids who are, you know, off the rails, not me. I mean, in hindsight, I so should have taken a gap year. That came later. I started out studying radiation therapy and I did that for 2.5 years. And I was in my last year and set to graduate, but my placement was at one of the children's hospitals in Sydney. For those of you who don't know what radiation therapy is, it's the treatment of cancer using targeted lasers to shrink cancer cells. And so I was treating these kids who were dying of cancer every day. And it wasn't uncommon to get a call, you know, from the ward to say, oh, so-and-so is not coming in for their treatment today because they passed away, or for kids to turn up to their appointment and be like, please just let me die. I hate being alive. I want to be like the other kids. And it just broke my heart. And I knew I wanted to have kids one day. And so I just took the time to go, do I really want to graduate? Because I know that I can't do this career for the rest of my life. I just, like, imagine when I have kids and this is happening. I just couldn't do it. I'm too soft. On the outside, I appear very fierce and independent, but I'm actually a huge softie. I did a huge pivot and I went, okay, well, I'm going to study a different degree full-time via distance education because now I want to make some money and buy a house and do all this stuff. And I'm also going to get a full-time job. And so I started to do a degree in criminology via distance education from a university in Armidale here in New South Wales. And I got a job working in the railway. So I started out as like operations support and I was doing like crewing the trains and time management and making sure people were qualified to the ports that they were going into and that they were booked in for their accommodation on the long haul trains. Like all of this kind of multiple people and places to be project managed. And I stayed in the railway for 6 years after that. So I graduated my degree in criminology, but in the meantime, I'd met my husband and he was working in the railway as a train driver. I was working in the office. We, long story short, got married. So I never actually worked in my degree as criminology, but I did stay in the railway for 6 years and I climbed the corporate ladder because that's what we're told success looks like. But what I learned in that experience is that success isn't the same for everybody. That's not what success looked like to me. But I'd been so conditioned that that's what success looked like that I was just doing it on autopilot. And so by the age of 23, you know, I was wearing fancy clothes to work with my little laptop bag and with my corner office overlooking the harbor, earning six figures, driving my new car in my new house with my new husband. And I was really, really unhappy. really unhappy, but I didn't even know it because I didn't give myself the chance to know it because I was like, no, you're really successful. Like, look at you doing life. You're amazing. Like, get it, girl.
I was going to say, my question was, were you really happy? But you've answered that.
Oh my gosh, so miserable. And do you know what? Like, before my brain even realized I was miserable, my body did. So a huge rash broke out on my face just before the wedding that nobody could get rid of. Like, I had laser on it. I went to so many skin doctors and nobody could explain this weird rash. Additionally, I got shingles all up my spine, which was extremely painful. I was lacking the motivation to get out of bed some days and I would just work from home, which for a driven person like me was completely off. I'm already a tiny as well, but I lost a lot of weight. Like, I started drinking heavily. Eventually, my husband dragged me to the doctor, and my doctor happened to be South African. So she knew about the trauma of my past and things like that because she experienced it too. And she said, Taryn, you have PTSD, chronic depression, and major anxiety. Like, after obviously doing all of these tests and questions and stuff, and me being me and conditioned the way I had been, I started yelling at her and hysterically crying. And I was like, there's no such thing as depression. I'm not weak. Do you have any idea what I've been through? I'm the strongest person I know. Like, just this really like word vomit of defense and ego. Right? Because I just couldn't accept the fact that I had got this low. And it was a shameful thing for me. I felt a lot of shame. And in hindsight, it was one of the best things that has ever happened to me because there is absolutely nothing shameful about mental health. And it's something that's so, so important and integral to us for us to thrive as human beings and to role model for our kids, for those of us who have them. It's that self-care and those boundaries and putting yourself first and making decisions to create a life that looks like success and happiness for you, not based on what someone else says it should be.
It's like staying in your own lane. And I say this, you know, so often it's, well, what is right for you is what's right for me is not right for you. Yeah. And we're very good at looking outside ourselves and going, well, maybe what they're doing's right. Or thank you for sharing that, because talking about mental health, PTSD, and recognizing it, and yes, having the blow up at the doctor, but then having the courage again to say, well, yeah, this is me, and I do have an issue, and I need to deal with it.
Well, the only thing that actually stopped me from kind of fighting that diagnosis, if you like, that label, was how she explained it to me. And I'd love to share it with others who may be in this situation. So she wanted to medicate me. And I was like, hell no, like, because I'm also a bit of a hippie at heart. So I like all natural stuff and meditation. And I'm a qualified yoga teacher and Reiki person and all that sort of stuff on the side. But she said to me, she said, Taryn, this antidepressant is not forever. She said, what it is you are a truck and you are stuck in the mud and spinning your wheels at the moment. She said, and you are wanting to climb this big hill. And what this medication is going to do for you, it's the tow truck that's going to reverse down the hill and it's going to hook up to you. And very, very slowly, it's going to help you climb the hill and out of the mud. And she said, but if you decide to come off the medication and you're only halfway up the hill, what's going to happen? You're going to slide back down into the mud again. She said, wait until that tow truck has got you to the top of the hill and then you can come off it. It's not forever. And when she explained it to me like that, I was like, oh, well, that makes total sense. Sure, let's go on the medication.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful analogy to explain.
It really was. And I needed it explained to me in that way rather than you have this horrible label that everyone still has this huge stigma about, right? And when she explained it to me like that, I was like, yeah, well, that makes sense in my head. So, yeah, let's do it. And I was on those antidepressants for a year until I found out I was pregnant. And then that then started another whole kind of chapter, if you like, of the story.
If you're interested in getting more involved in our community, connecting with people who share your interests, you can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au.
What happened in your career in the railways?
Yeah. So I obviously quit that high-flying job overnight because I realized that A, I couldn't physically and emotionally do it anymore, and B, I actually didn't want to. I went on the medication and I got a job as working for a not-for-profit, and I was doing their rostering systems and things like that. But a week before I was due to go on a five-week holiday to the UK, they made me redundant.
Oh, that was helpful.
Oh, yeah, it was super helpful. But again, you know, everything happens for you and not to you. May not feel like it at the time, but I honestly do believe that. It's how you flip your situation. And so, you know, I was pissed off about that at the time. Of course I was. But I went, oh, you know what? Let's go on this holiday, enjoy ourselves. And when we get back, I'll get another job. Easy peasy. Whilst we were over in the UK, we found out we were pregnant with our daughter, Autumn, who is now 7, almost 8. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, awesome. So I actually rang my doctor from over there and I was like, I'm flushing these antidepressants down the toilet. Now, for anyone listening, please do not do this. This is not advisable. And she told me so over the phone. That's what I did. And I was actually absolutely fine because I was worried about the side effects on my baby and I just didn't want to do that. And I actually felt something shift in me when I was looking at that positive pregnancy test. It was like, okay, now I feel ready to get back on the horse, so to say, and to sort my life out. Like, I feel strong enough now. So maybe I had got to the top of the hill with my little tow truck help. And I felt strong enough to do that. And so that's what I did, because I'm the type of person that once I make a decision, that's what's happening. Like, come hell or high water, that's it.
You get the opinion there's not a lot holding you back.
No. Sometimes I'll tell myself there is, but it's usually just because I'm scared. But like I said to my friend yesterday, I said, oh, I'll just do it and build a parachute on the way down. And she was like, yep, that's so you.
Oh, that's absolutely great. I'll do it and I'll build a parachute on the way down.
Yeah, I'll build a parachute on the way down. As I'm falling and screaming in terror, I'll just, you know, make a plan the universe, whatever it is, will always pull me before I hit the ground.
I think we're very alike in some ways.
Yeah. Anyway, so I came back to Australia after the holiday and I tried to get another job, but nobody would hire me because I was pregnant. Now, of course, they didn't say that, but we all know that, you know, I'm an entrepreneur myself. From a business perspective, like, who would you hire? The pregnant lady who's going to go off in like 9 months, or, you know, the younger person who's going to be there for a considerable amount of years? Anyway, I didn't get a job. And so I was like, fine, you know what? I'll just have this baby. I'll take the time to heal my emotional self a bit more, my physical self a bit more. And then once Autumn is born, I will go and get a job. When she was born, I didn't want to do that. I was actually terrified of going back to corporate. My experience of that world, I very quickly realized that it was not for me. And I was scared. I was terrified about being forced to go back into that corporate workforce. And so I made a plan. 6 weeks after Autumn was born, turns out I'm not meant to be a stay-at-home mum. Hats off to the woman who can do that, but that's just not who I am. So I started out as a virtual assistant when Autumn was 6 weeks old. So I taught myself how to design. I'm a naturally good writer, but I taught myself how to copyright from a sales perspective, from a storytelling perspective. I taught myself how to code websites, all sorts of things. And obviously the things that I'd learned in the railway, like project management, time management, team building, HR, all of that sort of stuff came into play. And I quickly booked myself out because people started referring me to other people. And the best thing about all of this is I could do it around my baby.
Beautiful.
And I mean, in my yoga pants and stuff. Like, I hate high heels and stuff. Like, I don't want to wear that. Like, no.
You'll have better feet in the long run for not wearing high heels.
I know, my legs might not look as good sitting behind the desk, but at least I'm comfortable.
Are you in your yoga pants now?
Well, yes. And it's really hot, so I've got my shirt rolled up because I'm hot.
Oh my god. We can have these appearances. Yeah. You look like the corporate woman there.
Oh well, yes, I've got a very nice, this is the best thing about Zoom. You can look professional on the top and not on the bottom.
Absolutely.
But if I'm not doing client facing, most days it's like, oh yeah, I'll just wear this baggy sweatshirt and all these sorts of things. Just comfort lady. You are not a showpiece for anybody else. The only reason I dress up as well anymore is because I feel good in it.
That's something that sometimes we need to dress up just for our inner self.
Yes, because sometimes you want to feel like the queen that you are. It's okay. And sometimes we're just a hot mess and that's okay too.
Yeah, exactly. So you started your virtual business.
I did, yes. And then so I booked myself out and realized that I wasn't earning the money that I needed to financially support myself. Even though I was married at the time, I wanted to earn more money. And so I scaled it up to agency. So I started to build out the business, expand the business. And so it became this virtual assistance and web development agency whereby I had people working in my team. And that was very, very successful. We started turning over six figures. Again, like I could work from home. My team all worked from home from various places around the world. And it was great. And I naturally then added in business coaching because a lot of my clients would come to me on our Zoom calls and be asking me like business coaching questions. And I thought to myself, I was like, well, not everyone's made for corporate. Why don't I start teaching people what I've done so that other mums who don't want to go back to the corporate workforce are not forced to. And so I added in business coaching, but I'm not going to lie, I actually didn't love business coaching because so many people would turn up to the sessions not having done what we discussed the week prior and then be like, oh, I don't know why I'm not getting clients and I don't know why I'm not making money. And I'm like, because you're not frigging doing anything. And then I felt bad for like taking their money. Even though, you know, obviously I'm perfectly entitled to because I'm still doing my job just because they're not implementing, but it just didn't feel aligned for me anymore. And what happened then was I met somebody who was like, hey, like, did you know you could start your own publishing company? And I was like, whoa, what? Really? Like I can turn my lifelong love affair of books into something that makes me money? Because I was still very much like of the majority of people think like this, is that these big publishing companies that turn over millions of dollars and, you know, have these big offices. But no, that's no longer the case. There's been a huge shift in the industry. Anyway, I mentored with her for 9 months and started my own publishing company, which is now Automatic Authority Publishing and Press House. I eventually shut down the virtual assistants and web development and business coaching and went all in on the publishing because I just love it so much. And all of my team from the VA and web development have come across and we've now expanded even more because we've now got a full media department, a full press department, a full web development department of the company. So we do a lot, but I love it. It's so fun.
Well, congratulations. That is absolutely momentous.
Thank you.
It's an incredible thing to go out on your own and start a business and make money, but to expand into something from criminology studies in Armidale, by the way, which is where I studied.
Oh, really?
I studied teaching up there in the days there was a teacher's college.
Cool.
Let's go back even further. The job in radiation, to actually make these changes and be brave enough to make these changes because they didn't align with your life or where you wanted your life to go, that shows true courage.
Yeah.
And to take the time to rebuild your career and to actually get to a place that you're really happy, you need grit and you need resilience.
Oh, yes, you do. It's not easy, but we shouldn't do things just because they're easy, right? There have been times where I've literally had, because I'm now a single mama, I've got my 7-year-old and I've got a 5-month-old baby boy. So I'm now a single mama. There have been times in my past that I have had $100 in my bank account. My rent was like $500 a week. Like you've got to pay groceries. Like cost of living in Australia is absolutely insane. Oh. Pay school fees, all of these sorts of stuff. And I was terrified. You know, 90% of the time I'm terrified. I'm not going to lie. Like, honestly, but that's no reason not to do something because you will find that if you just take the time to breathe and go, okay, this is really shitty, because it is, right? It's not nice being in that place, whatever place you're in. And you go, okay, I'm going to allow myself to be in this space for however long. But you don't stay there. And that for me is the key because I'm a big fan of processing your emotions. Like I cry at everything. I'm a crier. like, and I get angry and I like all those sorts of things. Your feelings are totally valid. And so I go, okay, you have got, depending on how big and serious and horrible the situation is, you have got, okay, you've got an hour to be mad about this, or you've got 24 hours to be sad about this. And I won't do anything else. Like, I won't go and try to keep pushing in my business, because it's never going to get me to where I want to go. So I spend that time being angry or sad or watching chick flicks on Netflix and whatever it is that I need to do to process. And then once that time is up, I go, right, that's done now. Now what are you going to do? Make a plan, because I can't stay there. I've got two kiddies depending on me. And why would you want to stay there?
Yeah.
Life is too magical to wallow in that dark hole of self-pity, which, by the way, 90% of the time is of our own making because of the decisions and choices we've made. Like, I've made some terrible choices and decisions, but I needed to make them to learn something more about myself.
Of the experiences looking back, what are you so proud of?
This is such a funny question, because like my executive assistant says to me, she's like, Taryn, it's about time you start viewing yourself as amazing, because you are. And I just don't, like, I don't view myself as that. Like, I just do the next thing. I just put my foot, one foot in front of the other. Do you know what I mean? The thing I'm most proud of is putting my kids first, creating a life and being brave enough to create a life where I said no to what society tells us we have to do so that I could be there for them. Like, I do the school run every day. I'm there for every school play. I'm there for every doctor's appointment. And I hope one day, I mean, my daughter's horrible to me at the moment. She's 7. Like, oh my gosh, she's so horrible to me. I hate you. I'd like a different mum. But, you know, I hope one day she will look back and go, no, my mum was always there for me.
I know there's other aspects to your life that you may not want to talk about. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I mean, I'm a pretty open book. Being a single mama wasn't ideal, was definitely not the plan. My son was an unexpected pregnancy, but what a joy, what a gift. One boy, one girl, like, and I'm not going to lie, it's hard. Like, I'm rapidly going gray. Lucky I have curly hair, because it just looks like highlights at this stage. But seriously, I am going rapidly gray. And people always say to me, how do you do what you do? Honestly, I have no idea. I think I'm probably insane. But I'm having a lot of fun doing it, right? You've always got to look at the positives. It would be so easy for me to lie down and just go, oh, things are too hard. Like, poor me. Like, this is really shitty. What am I going to do? I'm not choosing to do that. Don't get me wrong. I definitely had a period where I did do that, because it's important to do that. And of course I have bad days. You just got to look at the positives. Like, oh, well, now I don't have to share a closet with anyone. Now I can cook whatever I want. Now I don't have to consult another person about how I raise my kids.
People looking in at your life, I imagine, you know, you're very busy and you have, it keeps feeding your energy. And I think from the outside looking in, it looks really tough. And at times it is really tough, as you said.
100%.
But when you enjoy it and you're achieving things, it's much easier to push forward. And it's getting that momentum to do it. I take my hat off to you. You're an amazing woman.
Thank you.
I want to ask, now, have you a couple of pieces of advice for people watching this for them moving forward and going out on their own?
For entrepreneurship, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing is, like, Nike got it right, just do it, but make sure you have a backup plan. Okay. Do not quit your job if you do not have anything in savings and, like, you're renting a house and you've got bills to pay. That makes zero sense. And you're just going to be so stressed out that you're not going to be able to thrive. Maslow, for those of you who are into psychology, if not, Google it. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay. So there's like this pyramid of needs, and the base is, you know, taking care of food and shelter and things like that. And then you can move up into like love and relationships and self-esteem. And then you move up and you move up until you reach your full potential. Right. So if you are going to go out on your own, don't do it unless your base needs are going to be taken care of. Like, whatever that looks like, whether you get a loan for the business to start out, and I didn't do that. I bootstrapped the whole thing Like, I have never got funding for my business. I have always flown by the seat of my pants, so to say. Yeah. But, you know, there are so many different ways to do it, but be smart about it. You might start off as a side hustle. Like, go on things like, I don't know, Upwork or Fiverr. Like, if you're a writer, so I freelance write sometimes as well. Like, I write for Forbes and Entrepreneur and all these PR articles because I like it. But also, it gives me a little bit of extra income, which you can always use as a single mama, or everybody can use. I mean, buy yourself a holiday, go get your nails done, whatever it is that lights you up, yeah. Go do it. But what I will say is, if you are stuck in a job that you absolutely hate and it is literally killing your soul, what are you doing? What are you doing? You do not have to do that. Yes, we've been told that you have to do that, but there are options, and you are brave enough and resilient enough, and you have everything that you need, or you have access to everything you need to make a plan and happen. We create our lives. We write our own story. It's a choice about whether or not you are actually going to go out and do that. And you have to want it bad enough. Honestly, only crazy people are entrepreneurs. It's like being in a boxing ring and you get punched in the face again and again and again and knocked down again and again and again. And sometimes we stay down for longer than other times, but we always get up, back up, and we go, oh, cool, can we have some more? Like, honestly, entrepreneurs are crazy. It's not easy. Otherwise, everybody would do it.
Right hook, left hook.
100%. Like, if you're not getting punched in the face on a daily basis, you're not even being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Would you tell us how people can find you if they want to talk about publishing and the type of publishing and writing that you look after?
Yeah, so I actually specifically work with entrepreneurs to write nonfiction books that position them as authorities in their field. Okay, so we use these books as lead generation marketing tools, authority builders, to launch speaking careers, to drive traffic to websites, because they're evergreen marketing tools. Like, nobody wants to post 400 posts on social media a day. Like, oh my God, remember back in the day when the business coaches used to tell us, oh, you have to be posting 3 times a day on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Oh my God, it killed me. I hated that so much. But books, you can distill your unique method and knowledge into a book, and then you market that book. It's like creating a relationship, an intimate relationship within the pages of a book, that then people can't help but feel like they know you, they trust you. And so they come and naturally want to be in your Facebook group or buy your next level offer if you've done a good enough job of writing that book and solving the problem that your ideal reader and client needs. So that's what we do at Automatic Authority Publishing and Press House. So you can Google that if you want, or, you know, come find me on social. I've also got Taryn Reeves as my personal brand. Come and hang out with me, send me a message. Happy to answer any questions that you may have, because I'm a real person and let's keep it real. As you can tell, I'm down for the in-depth talks. Yeah, so come and find me on either one of those, on all the social platforms, Taryn Reeves or Automatic Authority Publishing and Press House, and I can point you in the right direction, whether that's with me or with somebody else, that, you know, who knows.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Taryn and I will continue chatting backstage, and we'll dive into the fascinating world of publishing, exploring insights that are truly invaluable. And if you're intrigued by what Taryn has to offer, and trust me, as a publisher, her wisdom is pure gold, then don't miss out on our backstage chat. Whether you're considering penning your own story or in need of a skilled ghostwriter, the Backstage Pass is your ticket to unlocking Taryn's wealth of knowledge. So I do hope to see you backstage. And until next time, cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. We'd like to invite you to support us by purchasing a Backstage Pass, costing about the same as 2 cups of coffee each month. With the Backstage Pass, you'll gain access to workshops and exclusive content, including videos from our live events. You can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au. We can continue to show that sharing stories changes lives.